This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. There's Jerry over there. Jerry's not eating anything today, Chuck. The air is clear.
And did you just do that as a coaster?
Yes. I don't want to make a chinky sound every time, like ching.
Oh,
ching,
okay. I thought
like this. I don't want that. I want this.
No, I get it.
Did you hear that? You didn't hear anything.
No, I said so everyone. Josh just folded up his notes and put his can of cola down on that, and I've never seen you do that. And I thought you were trying to preserve this cheap IKEA desk. No,
this thing is tougher than leather.
Okay, so it was a sound thing.
Sure, it's a sound dampening technique.
Man, look at us after all these years.
Yeah, I just came up with that.
Up in our game.
So, Chuck, do you remember we did a social security number episode?
Did we? I thought so.
You don't remember that one?
Yeah, sure.
It was one of those ones where you're like, my eyes are going to bleed because this is so boring. But it turned out to be pretty interesting.
Sure.
That was one of those.
Yeah, I remember that.
But we should give a little bit of a refresher on social security numbers, okay?
Yeah, here's mine.
Oh, you're going to give your
28794. No, I don't even, because what if I just accidentally said someone else's? Like made one up.
Oh, right. And people are like, oh, let me go try that.
Yeah, and some dude's listening. And it's like, dude, how'd you know?
Yeah. Todd.
Why is always Todd?
I don't know. So social security numbers, get this, everybody. They first started being issued in November of 1936. Mm-hmm. And the Social Security Administration was created to administer a New Deal program of federal benefits, mm-hmm. things like welfare or retirement benefits, Medicare. Mm-hmm. The entire reason any of us originally were given a Social Security number was to track our lifetime earnings mm-hmm. and to determine how much we'd put into Social Security so that when we retired, they could determine how much we should get out in retirement.
Right.
That's why everyone has a Social Security number.
Yeah.
And because they're nine digits, there's something like a billion different possible combinations. And we're about halfway toward using up the Social Security numbers.
Oh, interesting. But probably gaining fast.
We are starting to gain much faster than we were before.
Yeah.
Good point. But we've still got plenty of time. But because of this, Social Security numbers get retired when you die, which we'll get to. But originally, when you were given a Social Security number, that was it. It wasn't meant for anything else but to track your earnings and to figure out your retirement, right?
Yeah, not like when you go to get a haircut. Mm-hmm.
Basically.
And they ask you for your Social Security number.
Yeah, in the 70s, the federal government said, okay, there's a couple of other things that you should really have your Social Security number for. A passport.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
If you go to open a bank account, that was a new one too.
I'll buy that.
But then, like you said, like as computers came along, now everybody asks for it. It's become an identifier and an authenticator, and that is really bad. That is not what we should be doing with Social Security numbers.
Yeah. It really, not only that, but the phone numbers and everything and addresses, it just annoys me. And I'm not like a conspiracy guy. It's not like I think like, oh, what are they going to do with this? It just annoys me.
Well,
that I can't get a haircut without providing. I'm like, I have cash in my hand.
Yeah.
You have scissors.
Yeah.
Can we just do this?
Right. Can we do it like Floyd style?
Yeah.
You know.
But, oh, it annoys me.
But even if you take away the annoyance, companies have proven time and time and time again that they're not to be trusted protecting your Social Security number.
Yeah, there's that.
Because to authenticate you saying you are who you say you are, they've got to have your Social Security number on file. And when somebody hacks into their databases, they get your Social Security number. All of your information is right there. And it's become a real problem. But it's also become a real problem living a modern life without giving out your Social Security number, right?
Yeah.
So we say all this to point out that if for some reason you didn't have a Social Security number any longer, it would be tough to navigate life. And that actually happens to some people.
Yeah. If you've seen the movie Brazil.
Oh, is it like this?
You never saw Brazil?
No.
It's sort of this in a future dystopian world. But, you know, basically like it's bureaucracy at its best of someone who's, you know, dead or not dead and the government mixes it up.
Is that what Brazil's about?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up then because we would have heard from people. It's good, right?
It is. And you should go listen to the Movie Crush episode on Brazil with Jonathan Colton.
Okay.
His
oh,
favorite
I will.
Movie. Yeah.
I didn't know that one. That one slipped past me.
I wasn't talking to you, but sure.
Oh.
You're welcome to listen.
Oh, thanks. I'm part of everybody.
I had to go to the Social Security office recently to get a card because of this job and our new company.
Really?
Yeah. I had to prove, you know, whatever, that I'm alive.
You didn't?
And employable, I guess.
You didn't just give them your passport?
I couldn't find my passport because I'm in between houses right now, and it was buried somewhere.
Okay, but you do have it because we're probably going to Toronto this year.
I do have it. I did find it kind of after I went to the Social Security office. But all that was just to say that if you think the DMV is a pit of despair, just go to the Social Security office.
I don't want to.
It's not fun.
I really don't want to.
No.
So, okay, you can imagine how bad it is when everything's just hunky-dory and you just need a copy of your card. That's all you needed, right?
Yeah.
For some people, some poor saps out there, they are thought by the government and listed by the government as having died.
That's right.
And that is a big problem.
If you're alive.
Yes, because, again, you need your Social Security number for everything to start with. And then secondly, because we have enough Social Security numbers to go around— like I said, when you die, your Social Security number gets retired with you.
Yeah, they hang it in the rafters of your local NBA franchise.
That's exactly right. If you look really closely, they're all up there. But that is a problem for somebody who gets listed as dead on what's called the Death Master File.
Do I need to say it?
No. Even somebody listening to the very first Stuff You Should Know right now, they know what you're saying.
There's a bunch of good band names in here, but Death Master File is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also called the Social Security Death Index, but Death Master File is way better. I think you would agree.
It depends on who you're talking to. I think genealogists typically call it the SSDI. Everybody else calls it the Death Master File. It's what I saw.
You know why? Because they don't know how to party.
Or they've got their own little weird party going on.
Oh.
Yeah.
Didn't think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to look at people differently sometimes.
I was trying to think of the bumper sticker, genealogists do it blank.
Mm-hmm. In the archives.
Genealogists do it with their DNA.
With their dead ancestors.
God. Let's do bumper stickers.
Yeah.
Just have an ellipsis. That'd be kind of fun. So, all right, where were we? The DMF. All right. It was established the same time the Social Security numbers were back in 1936, and then it took all the way till 1980 before the public could even see this list.
Right, right. There was a Freedom of Information Act that was filed back in 1980, and there was a lawsuit, and the federal court said, you know what, yep, this is public information. You have to publish this. And there's actually like a master death master file that's called the Numident. And that's like everything. And that's the one that the Death Master File is derived from. The public version of it is the Death Master File.
Right, which when you die, there are a bunch of ways that your name can get to the SSA, the Social Security Administration. Sometimes it's a funeral home. Sometimes it's from like a hospital. Sometimes it's from your family.
Yeah. Because it's the family's responsibility ultimately to report it.
Yeah.
But most of the time, the funeral home is the one that actually does it as like a service.
I wouldn't have known that.
But I also saw, well, now you know.
Yeah.
There's probably some poor Stuff You Should Know listener, our condolences.
Sure.
Who's dealing with this right now. It's your responsibility to go report this to the Social Security Administration.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's sad.
I also saw that your bank, the Postal Service, some other randos are legally allowed to report your death as well.
So is the post person just saying like, I haven't picked up their mail in like 3 weeks.
They're dead to me.
I think I should just report this.
I don't know. I could not find the procedure from that.
Uh-huh.
Anything other than a couple of good sources mentioned the Postal Service as a legal place, a legal entity that can report your death to the feds.
All right. So why do they want this death master file? Of course, if you have paid, the government needs to know if you're not around anymore. It's kind of that simple.
There's a couple of reasons why. Yes, they need to know because
you get a little dough.
They can't have your Social Security number out there.
No.
They need to know that you're deceased because they don't want to be paying income tax refunds.
Right.
If somebody starts filing them fraudulently, they don't want people opening bank accounts in your name. They want to make sure that you're listed as dead.
Yes.
And so that's what the Death Master file does. It kind of serves as the storehouse for all the people in America who've been dead basically since the 60s, but it goes as far back as 1936 or 37.
Yeah, which is surprisingly more than 100 million people.
Yes, but they think that there's maybe up to 16 million dead people missing from this list.
Really?
It's not perfect. We'll spoil now.
Well, I guess we should then follow that statement by saying there are tens of thousands of people on that list who should not be on that list.
Right, exactly. But before we get to there, this death master file, originally, was Social Security could track who was dead and who wasn't, so they could determine who to pay Social Security Administration benefits out to the survivors.
Mm-hmm.
Get this. Did you know this? If you're in America and you're the recipient, you're the survivor of somebody who gets Social Security, you get a cool $255 to help bury them.
Yeah, that's when I said you get a little dough. That I meant little.
A little dough.
Yeah.
Maybe like one of the fancy handles on the casket would be covered by that. I don't even think you can get cremated for $200.
I don't know.
I don't even think they'll leave you in a ditch out back for $200.
A sky burial costs more than that.
Maybe that Tri-State Crematorium would take your $250, but that's it.
Yeah.
Do you remember them?
Oh, sure.
Oof.
Yeah.
Evil.
So, like you said, mistakes are made, and this is where it turns slightly Brazil. There was an investigation in 2011 that they actually named Grave Mistakes, which is hysterical,
mm-hmm.
By Scripps Howard News Service. And what they did was they took this master death file from three different years, 98, 2008, and 2011. They created a computer program to basically just compare them to see what they came up with. And that they found almost 32,000 living people who were listed as deceased in 98 or 2008 that were then taken off that list after they realized that they goofed up in
right.
2011.
So these people had spent months, years maybe, listed as dead. And here's the problem. It's bad enough if you go to apply for Medicare because you've retired or Social Security benefits and the government says denied. You're dead. You're mm-hmm. listed as dead. Because as far as the government's concerned, if you are on this, you're dead to them.
Yeah.
That's bad enough. But remember that Freedom of Information Act lawsuit that opened the thing up to being published publicly?
Yeah.
The reason why that suit was filed is because the business community said, hey, we can really use that thing.
Yeah.
It would be like a big do not take checks from these people list for all dead Americans. Because if somebody comes to us and wants to open a bank account, wants to get an insurance policy, wants to get a car, wants to get a job, it doesn't matter. Wants to do something where they could take us for a ride if they're a fraud, then if we had this list to check against, like Social Security numbers or names or whatever, we could root out fraud and we could defend ourselves from identity theft and the fraud that's perpetrated by it. And so banks, insurance companies, car dealerships, cable companies, employers, everybody, other government agencies,
barbers,
don't forget them. They all use this death master file, which is available publicly, to check your applications against. And if the government says that you're dead, it says it on this file, whether it's right or wrong, you're dead.
Yeah.
And that's a whole lot of problems for you. We're going to get into those right after this. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh,
yeah. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
So before we broke, I was talking about that that Scripps investigation.
Yeah.
And there was an Inspector General's report in 2008 that kind of pulled back the curtain on this stuff. Mm-mm. And Social Security said, yeah, that's about right. There's a lot of people, tens of thousands, that we think are dead and aren't dead.
But their success rate's pretty good.
Yeah. And they said, but we're at a 99.59% rate of accuracy, which is not too bad.
For a government bureaucracy, that's really good.
And they said that 90% of the time, you can fix it in just a year.
Just a hellish year.
Yeah, not too bad. And so they basically admitted to being a government. I don't want to knock them too much because mm-hmm. it feels like everyone's always, you know, knocking government work.
Who?
But they're basically saying like, yeah, man, these names are miskeyed or these numbers are miskeyed sometimes.
They're like, and it happens.
Yeah, yep. Pretty much.
So the thing is that 0.41% error rate, that's tens of thousands of people every year.
Yeah.
There's like 2.7 million people added to this list every year who die in America, right?
Wow.
So it adds up to a lot of errors. The thing is, the Social Security Administration, so they take their death master file, they hand it over to the National Technical Information Service, and they're the ones who distribute it to all the insurance companies, the genealogy websites. I think Ancestry.com publishes it.
Yeah.
The
credit bureaus.
Yeah. Insurance companies, everybody who wants to do a background check on you, they all get their versions of this from the National Technical Information Service. But part of the agreement to get this from them, you have to pay for it, is that you have to keep your DMF up to date. Because if you just buy one every once in a while, and the Social Security Administration finds an error on and updates their file, mm-hmm. if you don't go get the new file, your old file is still going to have that error.
Right.
And that's when it becomes problematic for the people who are listed as deceased when they try to go get credit. And it kind of has a tendency to spread once it's out there.
Yeah. So, like I said, sometimes it's being miskeyed. I think they said like one out of every 200 is just from clerical error. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be like a family member goes to report a death and they accidentally make a mistake where they might end up being on the death list.
Yeah. I don't know how that happens, but it does happen. There are people like Don Pilger.
Human error.
Mary DuBord. Who apparently Mary DuBord just gave up. She's like, my husband can get credit cards still. I'm just going to live off of his.
Sometimes this one woman named Candace Atkins just accidentally clicked deceased on a tax return on an electronic filing, and that was it.
Can you imagine?
No. I can't believe there's not an undo.
I was looking
into
that.
She had submitted. I guess you could probably have undone it in the moment, but she didn't realize it and submitted it.
Right.
But you should still be able to undo that.
You would think so.
And then there are some weird things, these anomalies that you dug up. More than 40% of false listings made in 2007 were from Illinois.
Yep.
That sounds like a hiccup in the system to me.
A hiccup in the system or a super lazy data entry person?
You think?
Yeah.
More than 2 million Americans were falsely listed as dying on the 15th. And that was just an internal policy is to use the 15th as a default value when mm-hmm. they didn't know.
Right.
Middle of the month sounds good to me.
Right. And I guess that was just a question of not going to the trouble of verifying the information.
Right.
So.
And it can happen the other way, too. You can be, I think, at least 6 million dead Americans are labeled as alive, which is a huge problem because your information is out there ready to be abused by the nefarious.
Well, no, that's the opposite. If you're listed as deceased but you're still alive, your information is being published and can be used for identity fraud. If you're actually dead and not listed, if somebody knows that you're dead and not listed, they can use your stuff to perpetrate fraud against the government.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 67,000 of those people of those numbers were used to report $3 billion in income between 2006 and 2011.
That's a lot of tax return refunds. So
fraud.
Yeah. So it's a problem both ways, where either you're dead and you're not listed on there, or you're not dead and they listed you anyway.
That's right.
And like I was saying earlier, once this information gets out there, because there's so many different entities getting this list, once it's out there, it stays out there. It's very tough to go around to everyone and get this information changed, even once you get it changed with the Social Security Administration, because while it's a requirement to keep your list up to date if you're a subscriber, there's no enforcement to it. There's nobody who comes along and says, let me see your list. Oh, it's not up to date. Give me $10. That's your fine. There's nobody enforcing it. So once it's out there, it's very tough to undo. It takes forever.
Well, less than a year on average, supposedly. So there are a lot of horror stories for what this can do to someone's life. This one person, Rivers, what's the first name?
Judy Rivers.
Judy Rivers, Rivers Cuomo. Police actually detained Judy Rivers because she used a debit card, her own debit card at a Walmart.
At a Walmart. Plus, she also had a Mountain Dew bottle-sized meth lab in her pocket.
it seems like all of these cases, it ranges from stuff like your insurance gets all messed up, or your maybe disability checks, or your Medicaid payments, or you're trying to get a home loan or trying to get a credit card, like anything that you can think of where a Social Security number might help you. Can't get a haircut.
Right.
You should see how long the hair is on these people.
Even if you have cash, they won't do it.
Rivers ended up living out of her car for 6 months.
Yeah, she had just a really bad time of it for 5 years. And at first she didn't know what was going on because she was frozen out of her bank accounts. Because this is something we said, like, like you can't get future loans, you can't get future insurance policies, you can't get future credit, but also the stuff that you already have, mm-hmm. your current bank accounts, all that stuff gets frozen.
Yeah.
Because you're listed as dead. And so that comes up on the computer and your account gets frozen. And even when you show up and say, hey, it's me, you know me, the teller can't do anything about it. The bank can't do anything about it. It's done.
Yeah.
And now you have just been pitted against the system.
Yes. And it's like, there's no door you can go knock on and say, hey, we can clear this up in just a few minutes. I'm clearly alive. You just click the few little things you need to click to mm-hmm. get my life back.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the U.S. government, it's not nearly that easy.
So I guess that, Chuck, that brings up what to do, because there actually are procedures in place. Like we said, the Social Security Administration says this is not fully accurate. Anybody who gets this list needs to keep updating it as we update it. I think they release an updated list weekly.
Mm-hmm. They don't even tell you, though. You find out the hard way almost always.
That's a big one.
Yeah. It's not like they say, by the way, we found an error, because they don't know. They don't know you're alive.
Right. So I actually called the Social Security Administration.
You did?
I did, because I wanted answers.
You didn't go to the office?
No, I didn't. I was a little lazy.
Coward.
It wasn't cowardice. It was laziness. So I was talking to like just the guy who answered, and he knew exactly what I was talking about, knew all the procedures.
Oh.
But I asked him, I was like, do you guys ever uncover this yourselves, or is it when people come to you that you know there's a mistake? He's like, yeah, when people come to us. So supposedly there's all these reforms in place and all that.
Hmm.
But I think still for the most part, when an error is uncovered, it's because you found it out. But even if they do find it out, yes, what you said is true. They don't inform the person, which is kind of a violation of the Privacy Act, right?
I would think so.
From what I understand, it is like anytime your confidential information is breached and made public, you're supposed to be informed about that. So the SSA should be sending out letters, but as far as I know, they do not.
I love this quote in here under the section on what to do. Like the Social Security Administration is trying to correct this. And there's a quote from someone who works there that said that sometimes they'll go out and see if older Americans are really still alive. And it says this: we go to Medicare and see if anyone hasn't been to Medicare for 3 years. And if they haven't been, we try to go out and make a phone call to call them and see if they're, you know, still here.
And the interviewer was like, are you drunk?
That's what it sounds like.
That was the follow-up question.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, supposedly because of things like that Scripps Howard News Service investigation in 2011, 60 Minutes did a big one, and I think 2014 or 15.
Oh, this is right up their alley.
Yeah, for sure. Yes, it is.
It's very 60 Minutes kind of story.
Like the truth of what you just said ran through me like a bolt. The Social Security Administration has finally kind of started to be responsive, and they are supposedly undertaking reforms, including having investigators try to root this out themselves.
Yeah.
Which ironically, they're relying on other government databases, like this guy said, Medicare, to check their records against. They've stopped taking reports from the state and now only accept direct reports from people. But that in itself opened up another problem, because they went back and cleared out the records of like 5 million Americans whose deaths have been reported from state databases.
Right.
So that 6 million went to something like 11 million of dead people who aren't on there.
Now, are they actually recommending that you pull your credit report 3 times a year?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
That seems like, I don't know. You're not, like, that affects your credit.
I don't know if that one does.
Really?
I know it's free for sure, but I don't know if it affects your credit or not. But yeah, so you get access to the credit reports from the three big bureaus, right?
Are you going
to
do that? Have you set up calendar reminders?
No, I'm going to now,
like,
though.
Once a quarter the rest of your life to make sure you're not listed as dead?
I haven't had time today yet.
It seems like if you're an active consumer in the world, you would find out very quickly.
Very quickly.
Without having to do that.
Yeah, that Scripps service, though, when they found the like 34,000 people who had been listed as dead,
yeah.
they tried to contact as many of them as they could. And they said about half of the people were well aware that they were listed as dead and been through nightmare struggles. But strangely, like half had no idea what they were talking about.
Huh.
So it's like, what kind of life do you have to live to not be aware of that? Because you or I would come up against it within a week or a month something, it seems like.
Yeah.
Like there would be something that came up where it's like, oh, wait a minute, but like it says this information is incomplete, or it says you're dead or something like that. We'd find out pretty quick.
Or just to go get money out of a cash machine.
Right.
It might say, sorry, your PIN doesn't work.
But I think the recommendation is in addition to finding out that you're listed as dead,
gotcha.
There's also a lot of other stuff that you can kind of keep tabs on by looking at your credit report 3 times a year, once every 4 months.
Yeah, and they say the real solution for all of us would be if every company on the planet doesn't require, well, here's the thing though, they can't legally require your social security number to open up a or start a telephone in your name at a home.
Right.
But they'll ask for it. And if you refuse to give it, like you may not be able to get it all, or you may just have a really, really hard time.
Yeah, they can refuse to do business with you. And that's the crux of the problem.
Exactly.
Because that de facto means that you need to play ball.
Yep.
Whether you want to give your social security number out or not, tough.
Yeah.
If you want that internet service or that cable service or you want that haircut, you're going to have to play ball.
Yeah, it was I remember growing up, it was I remember I had a social security card and I remember my mom being like, you got to put that in your desk drawer.
Oh, yeah,
and like,
I remember.
Don't touch it ever.
If somebody comes near your drawer, you shoot them with this gun.
Yeah, it was crazy. And now it's just like, I probably give out my social like twice a month.
Right. But because of those breaches, because so many people have your social security number now,
yeah.
and because hackers have gotten really good at getting into things like, I think it was Experian or TransUnion who were hacked in 2017.
Oh, yeah, that was huge.
Not only did it basically just totally erode the public's trust and credit bureaus to keep our stuff private. Like they were the ones who were supposed to be unhackable.
Right.
And I think 137 million social security numbers made it out into the wild.
Amazing.
From that hack.
Yeah.
That not only eroded trust in the credit bureaus, it was the beginning of the end for using social security numbers like we do to authenticate or as identifiers.
Yeah, companies, some are moving away from that now, right?
Yeah, because they're getting sued and they're getting fines and they just realize they can't keep this stuff protected. The problem is no one knows what's next. A lot of people have talked about like blockchain, but nobody understands blockchain, which by the way, we should totally do a blockchain episode.
Yeah.
But everybody's kind of like, it's probably going to be blockchain. But first, I have to go figure out what blockchain is.
Right.
And then we'll figure out how to do social security numbers through blockchain.
I'm sure in some offices, they're like, you know, the old barcode on the back of the neck seems silly, but it sure would work.
Have you seen Brazil?
Should we take a break?
Oh, yeah, let's.
All right, let's take another break. And we're going to talk a little bit about the rest of the world right after this.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh,
yeah. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
So, Chuck, we're going around the world in 80 days in our nice little balloon.
Actually, I said we're going to talk about the rest of the world. We're only going to talk about one more place in the world.
Hey, man, I got Canada.
Oh, yeah?
The UK.
Okay.
Basically, anywhere there's a country with a bureaucracy and a country where people die, there's going to be someone erroneously listed as dead.
All right. So let's go to India.
Okay, we'll do that.
In India, it's not always an accident. Sometimes it's an error, but sometimes you can do what they call, quote, killing people on paper, end quote, in order to say their property is mine, to lay claim to something legally. You can do so, especially, I mean, it's not legal, but it's something that happens.
No, you can bribe an official who will say,
yeah.
Oh, okay, yes, this person is dead. Thank you for reporting their death. Here is their land, uncle or cousin or whoever.
Well, supposedly in the northern state of Uttar Pradesh, it's become a real problem there. Mm-hmm. And there was a man, there is a man.
Yeah, he's still around.
Named Lal Berhari, who in 1976, at the age of 22, found out he was listed as dead. And his uncle, did his uncle do this or did his uncle just get the land?
His uncle's family.
Huh?
His uncle's family did.
Oh, they're the one that purposefully
listed
him as dead.
Yeah.
Just so they could get the land.
Yep. He went to go get a business loan. He was a loomer, and he went to get a business loan. And to get a business loan, he needed documentation of his identity. And when he went to go get that, the local records office is like, you're dead.
And it took him 17 years to undead himself.
Yeah. Fortunately for the world, he had a great sense of absurdity.
Of humor.
Yes, but also like the humor in absurdity. Like he realized like this is so preposterous and he really used that as motivation to make huge moves.
Yeah, he would answer the phone as dead person, which is Mritak. Is that how you pronounce that?
I think you just nailed
silent? It. He would answer the phone like that. He organized the Uttar Pradesh Mritak Singh, which is the Uttar Pradesh Dead People's Association. And it seems like really brought a lot of like attention to this through like almost like public absurdist public demonstrations.
Public shamings too.
Yeah, like parades of dead people walking around on the steps of like the government buildings and stuff like that. And finally in 1994, he did have his death overturned legally. Did you see whether or not he got his land?
I didn't see that, actually.
I'm curious.
It's a great question. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, I did not. I don't know.
But 221 people, because of his efforts in that area of India, had their deaths overturned.
Yeah.
Sounds
I mean,
so weird to
that
say.
Was just in 1 year even, which what I think is cool about him is he founded this organization and got his life back in 94,
yeah,
but still stayed on as the driving force behind the Uttar Pradesh Dead Persons Association.
And won an Ig Nobel Prize for it.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad.
We did an episode on that too. You remember the Ig Nobels?
Man, that was a long time ago.
Yep. So one more thing. We never really actually said what to do if you end up listed incorrectly as dead on the death master file.
Start answering the phone as dead Chuck.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Shame the government. Also, The other thing you're supposed to do first is go in person to your local Social Security Administration. And by the way, this is information directly from the SSA to me, to you, because I called them.
I know.
The guy said, just bring your driver's license and passport and we'll handle it from there. And I was like, wait, that's it? He's like, yeah, you know, the information matches, your picture matches. That's all you need.
And you said, if I handle it, you'll mean nothing will happen here. That's right.
Right. And I go, so do you give the person, so they give you a letter saying this person's alive. Mm-hmm. They were listed as deceased by mistake. Give them their credit or whatever. We love you, Social Security Administration.
Yeah.
And I said, do you give the letter then once they prove it? Or he's like, no, once the file is updated, then we typically send the letter out. Yeah. And I was like, how long is that, you know? Yeah. And it's weeks easily, if sure. not months, before you're going to get a letter. But if you find out, the first thing you want to do, go to your local Social Security office with your passport and or your driver's license and say, surprise.
Yeah, I saw that one person even had to have a note from their doctor mm-hmm. verifying that they were indeed alive.
Yep.
Weird life.
That must be. Weird death.
Country.
So if you want to know more about the Death Master File, you can go look it up. It's kind of interesting, actually, as far as bureaucracy goes. And since I said bureaucracy, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this... this is a follow-up on the Rape Kits episode, which we got a lot of amazing and sad stories from that one. This is about the money, the monies. Because remember on the show we said that, you know, you don't, you have to pay for that stuff?
For treatment.
Yeah.
Right.
Apparently you can get money back, which we meant to go back and re-record a section and did not.
Oh, yeah.
So this is by means of following up on that. Hey, guys, longtime listener. First-time writer, finished the episode on rape kits and realized I could offer some information that will hopefully bring some peace of mind. I work as a medical biller for a hospital in the Midwest. Part of my job is processing the sexual assault claims that come in. At our hospital, we have a program for those who present to the hospital after a sexual assault. We, in partner with the state, cover all the charges that result from the initial ER visit, and the patient is given a voucher for any relevant follow-up care that they may need over the next 3 months.
That is awesome.
It is, and we realize that a lot of states do this after we had recorded and published the show.
Yes. I'm so glad this person wrote in, though, so
yeah,
we could say.
It is good to know. We also take steps to ensure that the patient will never see a bill or be contacted by our department in regards to their visit to reduce any re-traumatization. I'm the point person for this process here, handle all the claims personally. I'm not sure how many hospitals implement this program, but I hope this helps y'all know that at least here, we do as much as we can to alleviate any unnecessary burden from our patients during this stressful and sensitive time.
That's really great.
Thanks for all you guys do. You have transformed many days, years, spent in a cubicle into opportunities to learn. Keep doing the great work. And that is from Maria.
Thank you very much. That was amazing.
Yeah, Maria, thanks for doing that job, too. That's tough stuff. Mm-hmm.
That was the antithesis of another email we got, who basically said, regarding your little soapbox about how society should take on that cost, keep your politics to yourself, because I disagree.
I don't know if I saw that one.
It was a bad one, and I just wanted to say that that person is a butthead.
Oh, no, wait, maybe I did see that.
I couldn't even bring myself to respond.
I think I did, and I did respond.
Oh, what'd you say?
I don't remember.
Did you tell them they were butthead?
Go jump in a lake.
There you go. Well, if you want to get in touch with us, whether we think you're a butthead or a saint, doesn't matter. We still want to hear from you.
Or a Beavis.
You can go on to stuffyoushouldknow.com, mm-hmm. check out our social links. You can also send us a good old-fashioned email. Wrap it up, spank it on the bottom, spray it with perfume, and send it off to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF.
20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.